It is Thursday, April 25th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith's 32nd season of entertainment presents Choral Glory, an evening of remembrance. It's tomorrow evening at 7:30 at the Fort Smith Convention Center. The UAFS choirs, along with a chamber orchestra and soloists, will focus on remembrance. Tickets and more information at uafs.edu.
Ahead on Ozarks, former Congressman Mike Ross explains why he's back in politics so soon after thinking he was done. Last week, he announced his candidacy for the Democratic nomination for governor.
Plus, we'll hear from a student at the University of Arkansas who recently was awarded a prestigious national award. You can see her work for a little bit longer in downtown Fayetteville. And the next step for Next Step in Fort Smith.
First, U.S. Senator Mark Pryor of Arkansas is working on a measure called the Marketplace Fairness Act. Senator Pryor says the bill sets up a collection system for sales tax on purchases from the Internet in an effort to aid brick-and-mortar stores and the local tax base, because many consumer purchases are now made online.
The real problems with state and city governments, because let's say you have a 6.5% sales tax. If you go into, say, a shoe store, you may look at the shoe, you may try it on, and right there in the shoe store, you may check online and realize that you can buy it a little bit cheaper because you don't have to pay the sales tax.
Senator Pryor is crafting the Senate version of a similar measure that was introduced by Arkansas Congressman Steve Womack in the House. Senator John Bozeman says the legislation is necessary to sustain both small and big businesses.
This is not a new tax. This is something that theoretically you're supposed to be paying right now, but nobody does it. If this were 10 years ago, I would say absolutely not. You know, the Internet was in its infancy. It needed to grow. But right now, the trend is dramatic increase in sales on the Internet. And because of that, I do think it's a fairness issue and that everyone should be in a position that they pay the same thing.
The Marketplace Fairness Act grants states the authority to make online and catalog retailers, no matter where they're located, to collect sales tax at the time of a transaction in the same way local retailers are already required to do.
The Boy Scouts of America will consider rescinding its ban on gays in scouting next month. Leadership and volunteering would still be restricted based on sexual orientation. Christian Swaim, the assistant scout executive for the West Ark Area Council, says the council is in favor of current membership practices, but that leaders are reviewing the issue.
We just got the feedback back in as a resolution came back to us, so right now they're working to formulate what they want to do based on feedback that we've gotten.
Swaim says he doesn't believe that will present a conflict with private and religious partnerships that work with scouts and are against gay inclusion.
You know, I don't know that I foresee a lot of that changing or that position weakening when the vote goes through, whatever direction it is.
He says the Boy Scouts will continue to collect and analyze feedback before casting a vote next month.
The Bentonville School District received some good news yesterday in regards to its plans for a second high school. The State Department of Education agreed to provide up to $15 million for construction of a 2,500-student high school. Michael Poor, the superintendent of Bentonville Public Schools, says while the news is great for the district, it likely won't see all of that money.
We submitted the totals actually almost 2 years ago of saying here's the scope of what the project would look like, and at that time our scope was to have 2,500 students. Our current way that we're trying to project this would be about 2,250, so we've scaled it down just a little bit, and as we scale down the number of students, thus the size, thus you also would scale down the amount that the state will give us.
However, he says he's fairly certain the school district could receive close to $13 million on one condition. He says for the money to be awarded, voters must approve a millage to pay for the majority of the project. That election is tentatively scheduled for September. Poor says if voters don't approve the millage this time around, the district will miss out on a level of state funding for the expansion.
Well, if we have to go into the second wave of partnership funding, meaning that we have to reapply for the next round, which would be still two more years off. If we have to look at 2 years away of having the legislature look at it, there's going to be several things that are going to change. Our wealth index may change. And then the final thing is that the state's money is more limited now than what it was 2 years ago or what it was 5 years ago or what it was even when they started this program. So, you know, this is a unique time for Bentonville schools to really help offset some costs that go back out to our patrons. And that's why this is so exciting for us.
Poor says the district officials have a full plate to get the millage proposal ready by this fall. He says that the school board hopes to have the financial proposal finished next month, with the facilities plan completed by June.
Another area farmers market has its opening day this weekend. Saturday morning, the Rogers Farmers Market will open its 2013 season. But this year, the market is moving to a new location. Carrie Jensen, director of Main Street Rogers, says the new location at the corner of First and Walnut Streets is better suited for the market.
It has a little bit better ambiance with trees and benches. They have some vendors that they would like to bring to the market that had some power requirements, and the other parking lot didn't have adequate power available, and this parking lot does. So I think that'll be a lot better. It also has much better parking, as the street parking is right there, so people can easily park and then just walk into the parking lot. The other area, sometimes people were parking on Arkansas Street, and it was a little dangerous, so we're a little more excited about this location.
The Rogers Farmers Market will be open from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturdays and Wednesdays. With the school year winding down, plans are being made for commencement ceremonies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. Commencement ceremonies usually mean distinguished speakers, and this year will be no different. The university announced this morning that Panamanian President Ricardo Martinelli and Lee Bodenhammer, an Arkansas businessman and philanthropist, will speak during the all-university commencement at 8:45 a.m. May 11th in Bud Walton Arena. Both men are U of A alumni, yet they will also receive honorary degrees for their professional achievements, philanthropy, and supportive education.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals won one and lost one in a doubleheader yesterday in Springfield. The Nats dropped the first game against the Springfield Cardinals 8-1. That was a game scheduled to make up for the previous day's postponement by rain. Then the Naturals came back to win the nightcap 10-3. The four-game road series concludes tonight in Springfield.
Forecast calls for mostly cloudy skies tonight with a chance of showers after midnight. Lows in the mid to upper 40s. Tomorrow, Friday, an 80% chance of rain and possibly thunderstorms with winds gusting up to 20 miles an hour. Highs around 60. Tomorrow evening, an 80% chance of showers and thunderstorms continues after midnight with lows from 48 in northwest Arkansas to 53 in the River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last week, former Arkansas Congressman Mike Ross made it official. He's seeking the Democratic Party nomination for governor in 2014. He joins former Lieutenant Governor Bill Halter in that race. Two Republicans, former Congressman Asa Hutchinson and Curtis Coleman, a businessman from Central Arkansas, have announced their intentions to earn the GOP nomination. Soon after Mike Ross announced he was running, he sat down with Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas for a conversation. Roby asked the Prescott native about his decision to once again enter the political world.
You said almost a year ago when you announced you weren't going to run for governor, you want to spend more time with your family, enjoyed not being in politics for a while. Clearly you've gotten the bug again. What's changed your mind?
Well, there's been a lot of changes in the political landscape in Arkansas, and quite frankly, it's been a grassroots effort. A few months ago, I would have told you that I would probably never run for office again. But literally in the last few months, I've heard from people from all walks of life, every corner of the state, asking me to reconsider and to run for governor, to lead this state. And I've heard the call. I'm humbled by it. And I'm ready. I'm ready to lead this state. I've got a vision that's about our values, our future. I couldn't be more excited. Look, I was fed up with Congress. You think you're fed up with Washington. I was so fed up I quit my job. I was tired of it because of the dysfunction and the partisan nature and the fact that nothing was getting done. But I'm not running for president. I'm not running for Congress. I'm running to lead this state. And I'm excited about that because I have a lot of faith in the future of this state. I think it's bright. I can tell you that a lot of people all around the state encouraged me to run because they are really worried about what's going to happen when Governor Beebe's time is up, and they didn't like the choices that they had to choose from. And so my entry into this race is about giving people a common sense voice and a common sense choice for governor.
Let's obviously this grassroots support that you talked about came about because Dustin McDaniel, the Attorney General, dropped out of the race for governor after admitting to an inappropriate relationship. What was it about that dynamic? You knew that you were poised a year ago to potentially run against Dustin McDaniel in a Democratic primary. He brings a 1st District congressional base to with him just because he's from Northeast Arkansas. You've got the 4th District covered. Were you worried that that was just going to be too expensive, too major of a primary matchup? What gave you pause for concern in that matchup?
Well, it was going to be a hard-fought primary, I think, between me and the Attorney General at the time. And, you know, things change. He's no longer a candidate. People from all across the state have asked me to reconsider. And quite frankly, all the support that he and I would have been fighting over is pretty much come to me and asked me to run. And I'm humbled by that. It's people from all walks of life and from every corner of the state. And my commitment to serve has never been greater. My desire to serve has never been greater. And that's because I really do believe in the future of Arkansas.
On your announcement day on Wednesday, you came out swinging with comments about the divisiveness at the state capitol, claimed that women's rights were not being respected at the capitol. You called Bill Halter's Arkansas promise an empty promise in response to a question I asked you. Short of Nate Bell, you really came out and agitated a lot of folks last week in terms of getting some feedback from people that did not necessarily like or agree with some of the comments that you made. Why did you come out so aggressively on announcement day?
Well, because I'm ready to fight. I'm ready to fight for Arkansas's future. I have a vision that is about building on the foundation that Governor Beebe has laid in the areas of education and economic development. I want to ensure that our children receive a world-class education and that after they obtain their education level of whatever it might be, whether it's high school, vo-tech school, or college, I want to ensure that they can get a job that will provide them the benefits and pay them a living wage, a wage that will allow them to raise a family and enjoy life, and they should not have to leave Arkansas to do that. And so that's worth fighting for, and I'm planning on spending the next year and a half of my life fighting for our children, our grandchildren, and for Arkansas's future.
Another fight that embroiled, I guess, the early days of the campaign here was your record over whether or not you're pro-life, you're pro-choice. You've obviously got pro-life votes in your background, but you came out and have taken some positions that a lot would argue is pro-choice, saying you would veto some of the abortion bills that have moved through the state legislature. Your campaign says you are pro-life, yet you would veto these bills. How do you reconcile those two philosophies?
Well, let me be clear about my position and what it's always been. I am personally opposed to abortion. I do not believe and do not support government-funded abortions with state or federal dollars. But like Governor Beebe, I believe from a public policy perspective, it should be safe, legal, and rare. What I was saying in my announcement speech was that what I was trying to say is our state legislature only meets for 60, 90, 120 days every other year in a regular session where they debate policy issues and craft laws that can really make a difference. And they spent way too much time this session attacking women, going back to the past and debating the same divisive social issues that we've been debating since the 1970s that have largely been decided by the courts and have now passed laws that are clearly unconstitutional. The state will now spend millions of dollars in litigation, and at the end of the day, they will be struck down as unconstitutional. Those are the reasons Governor Beebe vetoed those bills. Those are the reasons I would have vetoed those bills. That's millions of dollars that we could be investing in making college more affordable for the young people of this state.
Yet when you were in Congress, you voted for a 20-week ban on abortions for the District of Columbia, yet you're saying you would veto a similar abortion bill here in Arkansas. You voted for it in one instance, you're going to veto it in another instance. That seems inconsistent to me.
Well, they're not the same bill, number one.
They're similar.
Number two, most of the legislation I have voted on in Congress had to do with opposing federal funded abortions. And again, my position is the same. I'm against state and federal funded abortions. I am personally opposed to abortion. But like Governor Beebe, I think it should be safe, legal, and rare. And I'm just saying that this legislative session, it became too partisan. It became too much about debating the issues of the past. My campaign is going to be about the future. It's going to be about ensuring that our children receive a world-class education, that they're able to then get a job that will support a family, and that they will not have to leave Arkansas to do so. That's all I was saying. And I can tell you that, look, I've cast thousands of votes as a state senator and as a congressman. Experiences that I have that my opponent does not have. In fact, I've spent a lifetime casting votes in support of children, working families, women, and seniors. The only vote Bill Halter has ever cast was a vote for himself. And so, you know, this campaign is going to be long. I understand that. But it's worth fighting for our children and their future, a future that allows them to get a good paying job without leaving Arkansas. And I know my votes over the years are going to continue to be misrepresented and distorted. And, you know, I knew before I got in this race that I would be the victim of a lot of attacks. But you know what? I'm willing to take those hits if at the end of the day I can lead this state into a new century that allows our children to get a good education and get a good job and not have to leave Arkansas to do so.
You called Bill Halter's Arkansas Promise Plan an empty promise. What would you do differently to help help kids bound for college get a college education?
Well, I have a history of doing that. I voted to increase Pell Grants.
Though?
I voted to cut student loan interest rates in half. I think that we need to continue to find ways to make college more affordable. I will be outlining policies and plans on that in the coming weeks. I just announced for governor a few days ago, and we're still on our announcement tour as we speak, 14 cities down and 21 cities to go. But I can tell you that in the Ross administration, we're going to make sure that every child in this state who wants to go to college can find a way.
What about on economic development? You have touched on that as something that you want to continue the legacy of Governor Mike Beebe. Are you advocating the status quo in what Governor Beebe is doing, or are you talking about doing something more aggressive?
Well, I want to build on the foundation that I think he's laid in the areas of education and economic development. Look, our economy is getting stronger every day. If you look back to the 80s and 90s, during the last economic boom in this country, we saw a lot of new car plants being located in Tennessee and Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia, and Arkansas largely missed out. I want us to be ready for the next economic boom, and it begins with education, having a highly skilled, trained, and educated workforce so we can get those high-tech, good-paying jobs of the future.
Gubernatorial candidate Mike Ross talked with Roby Brock after formally announcing he was a candidate last week. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from four offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity, backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
Imagine never being alone ever again. Imagine sharing your innermost thoughts with your best friend, a robot.
When we construct robots, we are changing ourselves. We are changing what we are willing to consider a relationship.
I'm Guy Raz. The promise and the peril of our robot overlords. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, Sunday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Today, we take a tour of downtown Fort Smith. We begin at the Next Step Day Room, an organization that provides a variety of services to the homeless, including meals, anger management services, adult education, and they have a couple of off-location supportive homes. Their services have expanded so much in the 10 years since they've started, the organization is on the verge of changing its name to Next Step Homeless Services. This main location sits on the corner of 6th and B Streets, directly across from St. John's Episcopal Church, who owns their building and sort of helps them out. It's lunchtime, and I'm stopped by a woman intrigued by my microphone. She has three cats and three carriers on the sidewalk out front. She has a complaint. Next Step won't let her leave the cats in the doorway while she comes in to eat. Dan Mayer is president of the Next Step Day Room Board of Directors. He says this is one of many issues with the homeless and the organizations that serve them. and one that would be solved with the creation of a homeless campus. The campus would bring together all of the homeless agencies in Fort Smith to one location and would create a low-demand shelter. More on that in a bit. For now, let's start the tour.
So we're here, and then in terms of the concept of the homeless campus, the Salvation Army is kind of just like right behind here. So just kitty corner one block from the day room. And then I can show you, I don't know, do you want to take a little tour? Are you okay with that? Because it's all very close.
The Salvation Army is at 5th and D Streets. And one more block over.
This is the Community Rescue Mission. And the whole campus concept was started because of, in August, it was September or August of 2009, the Community Rescue Mission wanted to expand. And so there's a main building here, and then they have, I'll drive down there, they've got some other buildings there. But they approached the zoning committee about expanding onto this lot. And I don't know if you noticed, but what's right behind us is about a, I don't know how many blocks it is, 7-8 block, it's the historic district. And the historic district is organized and not in favor of homeless services expanding in this area, want us, all the agencies, to relocate.
The result was the creation of a homeless task force, with all homeless agencies under the umbrella of the Old Fort Homeless Coalition, along with the city and other businesses represented. The ultimate recommendation was to build this homeless campus, where all agencies would have a space. It would also create a low-demand shelter. As of now, the overnight shelters do not allow entrance to those that are drunk or high, and some have mandatory chapel, which some people don't agree with.
Around and, you know, we make partnerships and the coalition comes around, but if things happen, and what's the time frame like for a mall campus? You know, what's, I mean, there's tons of things to line out.
A lot of what is proposed in the homeless campus is not done right now. No, nobody has been doing it. No, there's not been a low demand shelter at all. So that's it's a great thing. I mean, and it's needed. We need that very much.
As a result, many people opt to sleep at the river camps or just outside. Dan Marr has been on Next Steps board for 6 years and says that they have been on board from the get-go until now. Though they will continue work with the Old Fort Homeless Coalition, Next Step has halted any plans to move forward with the so-named Riverview Hope Campus until certain criteria are met, the first being partnerships. In the beginning, all agencies were on board. Not so much anymore. The Community Rescue Mission dropped out for whatever reason.
And the Next Step Day Room and the Salvation Army and the Community Rescue Mission, we are the three main agencies that deal directly, with homeless individuals and where they are and how do they access services and whatnot. And so so it was disappointing that the Community Rescue Mission stopped going to those.
All agencies are needed for a variety of reasons. One being to have all options and services represented at the campus. Another is to help fill the space and share the cost of that space.
This is the building right here. This was, I believe it was a Riverside Furniture building. And the front end of it, as you can kind of see, was office spaces. So the front end of it would not require a lot of renovation. It's a huge building. It's actually far bigger than is needed, even for all three. And the Salvation Army is talking about building right over here in this adjacent lot. So if they're not physically in the building, that's even less space.
That's another problem. Next Step is cramped in its current 1,700 square feet, but it doesn't need the 10,000 square feet that are allocated to the organization in the campus's current plan. And it definitely doesn't need the utility bills that would go along with that space. Marr says they cannot proceed until each agency has its own defined space and they reevaluate the actual cost to each agency.
When it was initially presented to the Next Step Dayroom board, it was presented more of a kind of a mall concept. And I think the mall analogy, I don't know, for me it works better. It's like Old Fort Homeless Coalition being the umbrella agency that operates the entire campus and then condoize within it. So the next step has its, you know, its little anchor mall spot is condoized and belongs to it. And that's, from what I understand, that's better for agencies if agencies can condoize in terms of grants and whatnot. I don't understand the particulars of all that. But
the actual location of the building is also not ideal, though there isn't much to be done about that. The city and the task force have designated that the campus must be south of the National Cemetery and in between Wheeler and the Poteau River. That doesn't leave many options, and it is difficult to get to, even in a car.
I mean, another concern I have is the homeless are going to still go downtown. I mean, they are all free to go wherever they want to, just like all Americans. And so the problem of getting down here, I mean, the way I drove in is pretty much the best way to get here if you were walking. And so what I'm afraid they'll do is walk them down the tracks more, which is, you know, dangerous. And then if you follow the tracks all the way down, it goes through the National Historic Site.
The Next Step Day Room continues to be committed to the idea of a homeless campus. They just want to ensure that client well-being is maximized and that agencies are treated equally. The hope is that a resolution can be made very soon. Next Step is in danger of losing a $400,000 HUD grant for its Safe Haven project. It would provide supportive housing to homeless that suffer from serious mental illness, something that is not represented in the area right now. They hope to reach a resolution by the end of May. This is Ozarks at Large.
It is Thursday, April 25th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellams.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Welcome back.
And trust us, that took a three-minute debate to figure out where we were and what we were doing here. It's got to slow down. No, it's not. It's the time of year where it speeds up.
That's what I said. A 10-day fundraiser, and then I had a cold, and I'm like, bam, there went April.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you thought Alice in Chains wasn't performing anymore, here's what was another surprise to me? Fleetwood Mac's on tour.
Yeah, they are.
A tour.
Yeah.
Not just
a one-off, but a tour, yeah.
A reunion tour, and they will be at three regional venues in the next few weeks. Sprint Center in Kansas City, Missouri on April 30th, the BOK Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma on May 1st, and Verizon Arena in North Little Rock on May 3rd. And you can find out more at fleetwoodmac.com.
Well, you could just follow them for a couple, 3 days,
you
couldn't you?
Could,
yeah, that wouldn't be that hard.
Fun.
Yeah.
And some other things coming up in Tulsa. If you missed them in Fayetteville, Little Big Town will be at the Joint at Hard Rock Casino on the 26th.
Just at the Amp, weren't they?
Mm-hmm. Need to Breathe is at the Brady Theater on the 29th. And Jewel is at the Joint at Hard Rock Casino on May 3rd.
How about that?
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This week, the University of Arkansas announced a senior art major, Emily Chase, is a recipient of one of the most prestigious undergraduate art awards in the country. The Wingate Foundation Fellowship is awarded by the Center for Craft, Creativity, and Design to just 10 undergraduate students across the country annually. Emily Chase, a student in the University of Arkansas's Honors College, was given the prize and the accompanying $15,000 for her arresting paper gowns.
And the skirt is made out of three pieces, and the pieces are held together with magnets, so it comes apart, and then it can snap back together. When I figured that out, I got really excited.
Three of Emily's paper gowns command the center of the basement of One East Plaza this week. Her life-size garments include a ghostly white gown. She's titled Husk. It's a formal gown made of rice paper with sleeves and torso slightly singed and burned. Another dress, a spray-painted formal called All in Knots, is inspired by the Red Riding Hood story. Upon careful inspection, that very story is revealed within the art. Emily says she is intrigued by paper as a medium, in part because of its ubiquitous nature.
It's actually kind of impossible to get away from. It's books and sketchbooks and newspapers and advertisements. It's everywhere. But it's also, I think, a lot of times what people start out with when they're making art. You know, when you're a little kid, maybe your parents or your teachers will give you coloring book and crayons or some printer paper and some colored pencils just to let you get started. And that's where I got started.
Emily says drawing is a love of hers, and her familiarity with paper through drawing led her to experiment with turning paper into three-dimensional forms. The general artistic inspiration for her was fostered at home. Her mother is a painter and high school art teacher, and her grandmother works with different media as well.
She actually was a ceramicist. When she was younger, she ran a ceramic studio, and she did slip casting. And she was a teacher. She taught classes. And then when she stopped doing that, she started quilting, and she makes about 300 quilts a year and donates them to the women's shelter and other sort of things like that in my hometown, Tahlequah, Oklahoma.
Emily's paper gowns, her thesis project at the university, represent a combination of her interests, fashion, art, and storytelling. She calls the exhibit This Fragile Armor.
So the idea that people can wear clothing to sort of put on a front. You know, the way that we dress says a lot about how we think about ourselves and how we want to feel. And I think the idea of sort of like what you're presenting versus what you're experiencing is very interesting and very important. And that was a lot of what I wanted to talk about when I was trying to figure out what I was doing with this work. So having a dress that, you know, like in Hollow Bones, you have a dress that's sort of upright and very structured in the front, and then in the back it's open and exposed and you can see inside.
Emily's faculty mentor, Kristen Musnug, an associate professor of art, says her relationship with Emily, as Emily created her thesis and award-winning gowns, was part advisory and part intellectual collaborator.
Emily would come to me and talk about her ideas, and I would, you know, tell her some other things to think about or maybe push her to develop an idea more. And there's definitely been some problem solving. With the Red Riding Hood, she had this, you know, drawing with this very, you know, sort of softly draped hood, and we were trying to brainstorm ways to do that, and then we hit on the getting the paper wet, and that was so exciting.
Both Emily and Professor Musnug light up when they talk about the process of creating art and the sometimes serendipitous discoveries that can be made while creating. Kristen Musnug says, and Emily agrees, that the journey to the finished product is just as rewarding, if not more rewarding, than the finished piece.
If the process weren't fun, we wouldn't do it. I mean, having the object at the end is nice and you feel proud of it, but it's doing it that is really fun.
I would agree with that. I really love making things. I think I don't, you know, no matter what I end up doing in my life, you know, if I, you know, end up, I don't even know, but if I, no matter what I end up doing, I can't imagine ever not making things. I think that's a big part of what makes me who I am, and a big part of what, you know, keeps me sane. It's just I love to work with my hands, and I just love to create things.
Applicants for the Wingate Fellowship must write a 600-word document with their artistic statement included, as well as a summary of how they would use the $15,000 award that comes with the fellowship. Emily plans to further her studies of the art form in Japan, New York, and at the Penland School of Crafts in Penland, North Carolina. Her undergraduate career at the university is just weeks away from ending. Her thesis work will come down in a couple of days, and in less than a month, she's bound for Japan. Professor Kristen Musnug says she's excited just to see what Emily does from here.
Making paper dresses is not something that we teach in our program, or really that I think any art program teaches, and there's only probably a handful of artists in the world who do this. So Emily had to completely teach herself how to do it, and she did an amazing job.
And I really want to thank Kristen, because she's been a really amazing mentor to me, and sort of throughout this process, I think she's really been really good at pushing me in the right direction and then letting me make my own discoveries, which is incredible. And I think really without her help, I would be not here right now. And also I wouldn't have discovered so much about myself as an artist and a person. And I think that's been a really incredible experience for me.
You can see Emily Chase's work, as well as the work of other University of Arkansas art students, at an exhibit at 1 East Plaza on the Fayetteville Square. But don't wait. The closing reception for the work is tomorrow, from 5 until 8 p.m. However, Emily Chase's work will also be included in an exhibition taking place April 29th through May 4th in the Fine Arts Center Gallery on the University of Arkansas campus.
In recent times, we have seen that heroes don't just exist in the movies. Real-life heroes may not possess a superhuman ability, but they do have courage and the want to protect others. The Northwest Arkansas chapter of the American Red Cross will hold their 5th annual Celebration of Heroes event next Saturday, May 4th. The event honors everyday people that have gone above and beyond to help another in an emergency. The event serves as the chapter's main fundraiser, along with raising awareness about why it's so important to be trained. Heroes are not necessarily a volunteer with the Red Cross. It's just somebody that's done something awesome in the community, gone above and beyond, or saved a life. Other Red Cross chapters hold similar events across the nation, but Jeff Patrick, communications director with the Northwest Arkansas chapter, says the event is unique to the area.
It talks about everyday people that have responded to an emergency. And, you know, we're going to have a great dinner. We'll have drinks, of course, a silent auction. And then we get to hear our 6 hero stories. So hear from them either through video or through on the stage what their story is and how they came to become a Red Cross hero.
Heroes range from a Red Cross employee to a Boy Scout troop to a 16-year-old boy who saved the life of his classmate in Magazine, Arkansas.
And he was actually at school one day, and a classmate had passed out, had collapsed, and another teacher was responding, and he and another teacher performed CPR and actually initiated the whole response with emergency services personnel and continued CPR until EMS arrived.
He didn't stop helping when EMS arrived. He said he wasn't scared because he knew exactly what to do, thanks to training. He earned the Youth Humanitarian Award. After a short time in Arkansas Children's Hospital, the boy he saved actually spoke with the organization. Heather Selby, another honored hero, is Program Center Coordinator for the Red Cross working out of the Jones Center in Springdale. She's a former EMS worker. One evening, she was doing what we all often do, having dinner at a restaurant with her family.
Noticed that there was someone coughing. We looked up. It was a little girl, you know, and she was still trying to cough it up. So, you know, at that point, wasn't really worried about it. But then noticed that she was not coughing any longer and she was starting to turn blue. So we got up, went over there. I asked the mother if I could help and that I was trained. The mother was a little panicked because she did not know what to do. I grabbed the little girl. I asked someone to call 911 at that time, basically started doing the back blows. And on the 5th back blow, she finally coughed up what she was choking.
For those of us that aren't trained, a back blow is hitting somebody on the back, which a rescuer is supposed to try first before the abdominal thrust, what we commonly picture when we think of a choking incident. And there you go. Heather saved a 3-year-old girl. She says it was less than a minute and a half from the time she noticed the coughing to the end of the incident. She says that if trained, it's easy to jump up and know how to help.
You honestly do. I mean, instincts just kick in, especially if you're a mother or a father and you have children. I mean, it just kicks in. But if you see anyone suffering, I mean, it's just human nature to kick in if you know what to do. I mean, more people are going to be withdrawn and not want to help if they're not trained. But with the training, you have a little bit more confidence there.
Heather says she was the only one that knew what to do in the restaurant. Even with her background as an EMS worker and with working for the Red Cross, she says this was a very eye-opening experience for her. The main thing she took from it was she had to get her family trained, beginning with her 12-year-old son, who started asking questions immediately.
I just realized, you know, they don't know what to do. And, you know, they're at the age where they're home alone. And what if his sister had ate some candy or something had gone down wrong? You know, it would be... I would feel really bad knowing that I didn't give the training when I work here. At that point, that's when I decided, you know, they're going to get the training in. I think it was a week later and they were in the training.
That was in February. Honored heroes at the Red Cross event aren't just individuals. Jeff Patrick with the Red Cross mentions a group of young men.
You know, another one of our stories is a Boy Scout troop that were trained through Red Cross and Wilderness First Aid, and they went out to Philmont to one of their big Boy Scout camps, and they were out in the wilderness and had a leader go down, and they had to use their skills that they learned through Red Cross to respond to that emergency. Sent two, you know, they followed the buddy system. They sent two to go down and get help, two up the road to see if they could flag down a car, and then the other one stayed back to stabilize the victim and make sure that he was okay, performed CPR on him, and monitored him until emergency services could arrive.
And a business will also be honored. Walmart will be receiving the first ever Elite Humanitarian Partner Award.
And what that means is that they have supported us for many years. We have a 20-year history with Walmart, and they've been there through hurricanes, through floods, capacity building. We actually provide health and safety training for their distribution centers and their associates. And then they're also involved with every line of service. So whether it's services to armed forces, health and safety, blood, disaster services and preparedness, Walmart has stepped up and been one of our premier partners for many, many years.
For more information or to purchase tickets for the 5th annual Northwest Arkansas Celebration of Heroes event, taking place Saturday, May 4th at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers, visit redcross.org/Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation, and KUAF is supported by Penguin Ed's Barbecue, offering catering services for parties or events of any size at either your location or one of the banquet rooms at the Mission and Weddington restaurants. Various catering packages available, penguineds.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Mad Men. I've been watching this season and I have so many questions about what's happening to Don Draper and Megan and Don Draper's new mistress. I just got to pose those questions to the creator of Mad Men, Matthew Weiner. We'll feature that interview with Matthew Weiner on the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air, tonight at 6 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Good day. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and joining me now is Jody Beznoska. She is Vice President for Communications at the Walton Arts Center.
Hi.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Good.
Sun's out.
Yay. Finally. Hooray. Yeah. We love it. Well, it's appropriate because Artisphere is coming, and we'll talk a lot about that. But first, let's get through what's going on this week. There's a lot actually happening this week. Tonight, Theater Squared begins, I think it's their second week of Next to Normal at the Nadine Baum Studios. Have you seen it?
I have not yet seen it.
It's really good.
It's what I hear.
It's really good. It runs through the 12th of May, so we have a little more time. Don't miss it, but it is definitely worth seeing. So that continues. Then this weekend, we will also have at the Walton Arts Center, we'll have American Idiot. It runs Friday night, two shows on Saturday, two shows on Sunday. I have it on good authority that there are really good seats available for the matinees. This was a musical that kind of took Broadway by storm a couple years ago. It's a new version of Broadway based on a modern band's work. But
well,
I'm looking
and
forward
it's
to
it's
it.
Kind of this album came out when I was in high school.
Yeah.
You know, junior high. Green Day was you know, so anybody in their early 30s, you know, late so should
remember the music.
Yeah.
You know, and the story I think is universal. You know, it's about what happens when you grow up. You know, how do you deal with those things? And then it's framed, of course, through this music. So it should be great. There are student tickets available for high school students and college students, half price. So that runs from the 26th through the 28th. Sunday is the 28th, and there is an event happening. It's really the first Artisphere event of the Arts and Nature Festival, and it's happening at Crystal Bridges. It's a 3 p.m. lecture in the Great Hall. It's called Artists Collaborating with Nature. And it features Celeste Roberge, who is an artist whose work is featured outdoors, I believe, at Crystal Bridges. It is a conversation between her and Stacy Levy, mm-hmm. who is one of our Artisphere artists at the Walton Arts Center. And Stacy, I think, just flew into town, and she's beginning to work on a really cool project out at Lake Fayetteville. She's building a spiral sculpture, and the sculpture is made of floating wetlands, and the plants that she plants are meant to help clean and purify the water. So if you're running or you're biking along Lake Fayetteville any time in the next 3 weeks, you'll see people out there working, and that's the project.
So exciting. The graphics, you know, the graphics look really cool.
Yeah, it's neat. So we're pretty thrilled about that. And so Stacy and Celeste will be chatting it up at 3 o'clock on Sunday at in the Great Hall at Crystal Bridges. That's an event that is free to Crystal Bridges members, and you have to pay for it if you're not a member. And you can get the tickets through the Crystal Bridges website for that. So that's Sunday. then we begin Artisphere in earnest next week. There's so incredible much going on, I can't even really get it all out. So the first event will be Thursday the 2nd. That will be the gallery opening for our new exhibition in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery. It's called Untamed, and it features the work of six different artists, mostly painters and photography, and it deals with interesting reflections on human-animal interactions. And we will have a reception 5 to 7, and I think there'll be a curator talk at 6. We will also have another exhibition up in the lobby at Walton Arts Center. This one is called The Herd, and it's created by an artist from Indianapolis named Tasha Lewis, and it will feature animals sort of leaping out of the walls and leaping over the ceiling.
Okay, so like 3D.
Yeah,
okay.
like they're
sculptures.
So we'll have the exhibition in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery, but then we'll also have sort of a different kind of exhibition out in the gallery. And all of that will be celebrated at the opening reception on the 2nd. Then on Friday, we will be in two places at the same time. We will have Jungle Jack Hanna at 7 o'clock in Baumwalker Hall at Walton Arts Center. There are a few tickets left for that, but those are almost gone. And then we will also be up at Bentonville First Friday. We'll have four different artists at Bentonville First Friday on the 3rd. We'll have Carter Sampson, who is a Oklahoma-born Fayetteville singer-songwriter. We will have Brickfields Band, who are from Northwest Arkansas. They'll be playing. And then we will have Jamie Stone, mm-hmm. who is not from Northwest Arkansas. He is an award-winning banjo player. So they'll all be playing for free at First Friday. And then we will also have the Earth Dinosaur Petting Zoo will appear
okay.
at First Friday as well. This is a puppet company out of Australia, and they create life-size dinosaur puppets, and they roam the streets, and you can meet them and interact with them and learn about them, and they will be at First Friday as well, roaming around.
Okay.
So you might run into a T-Rex or
a pterodactyl,
or maybe yes. but they will be there, and it will be a lot of fun. This is and of course this is in Bentonville. Mm-hmm. We'll also have a booth at First Thursday,
the prior
day. So lots going on. On Saturday, probably the busiest day of the year for Fayetteville, I think, in terms of art and festivals, we will have Old Crow Medicine Show out at the Amp that mm-hmm. evening, and then Walton Arts Center will be presenting the Trail Mix Concert Tour, which has two legs. Leg one is in Fayetteville from 10 to noon. Leg two is in Bentonville from 3 to 5. The Fayetteville leg is along the Frisco Trail, which is the one right by the studio here. The second leg will be on the art trails at Crystal Bridges. So we'll have 7 or 8 bands. If it rains, and we are crossing our fingers that it won't, but if it rains, our rain date is the following day, Sunday. And on that following day, we'll have Delbert McClinton at Walton Arts Center. That's a 7 o'clock show. The following evening, you have one more chance to hear Jamie Stone, the banjo player. He'll be playing at Thorncrown Chapel in Eureka Springs, a 6 o'clock concert. That's going to be spectacular. And then on the 7th, Threepenny Acre will be playing at Cooper Chapel in Bella Vista. So that's the 7th. That's a Tuesday. And then we get into the 11th and the 12th, which are busy days full of children's programming. Our friends at Clubhouse and Soul Yoga will be doing an event at one of the parks. It's called The Art of Strength. And then on the 12th, we're going on a bear hunt, which is a beloved children's book brought to life on stage. That's also at Walton Arts Center. Oh, my. And I've gone on and on. Quick looking ahead to the next week, we'll have The Price is Right on the 16th. That's a 7 o'clock show. And then another kids show on the 18th. It's a performance called Grug. So, whew, take a breath. A lot going on. And that's just at WAC. There's, you know, things going on all over the place
right.
this time of year.
Okay, well, Artisphere.
Artispherefestival.org okay. for more information. You can also go to waltonartscenter.org. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/waltonartscenter, and we'll be linking up to a lot of this stuff there. And, of course, you can call us, 443-5600, or you can come down and visit us. The gallery is not open right now because they're installing, but the box office is open, and they're always glad to see people.
Okay. Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
Jody Besnoska is Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center.
This is Ozarks at Large. Tomorrow night, a free poetry festival begins at 7 at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. Over the course of two nights, more than 20 poets will read their work. This week, we've invited some of the local poets participating in the event to read a selection on our program. Katie Nickel grew up in St. Cloud, Minnesota, and says she started writing poetry when she was about 12.
I was an angsty junior high kid, and then there was like assignments, and I got really into them. I remember specifically like one language arts teacher being like, "You wrote a poem, and it was good." And then I was like, that can be my identity. It's a much different kind of identity than it was when I was 12, though. I tried other things, and I always kind of came back to it. This one is called A Dream More Horrible Than Others. I wrote it as a project, as part of a project for an epic poetry class with John Duval up at the university. And it was a project that had to do with Gilgamesh, and I kind of created a character named Feriloque. And she doesn't appear in this poem at all, but this was kind of from Feriloque's voice. A dream more horrible than others. The man's fist was like a house, an entire house, floating to me like a huge cloud in slow motion. And then his fist was his face. Blood and glass shot from his mouth. Then beside me I saw a tiny girl come across a tiny bird, a canary or finch. She seized the creature. She broke its wings. She stomped its heart. She fed it to the man's fist. She fed it to the man's fist. She stomped its heart. She broke its wings. She seized the creature, a canary or finch. A tiny girl came across a tiny bird. Beside me, I saw, shot from his mouth, blood and glass. His fist was his face then, a huge cloud in slow motion, floating to me, an entire house. The man's fist was like a house.
Katie Nickel is one of more than 20 poets scheduled to read during a two-night poetry festival at Nightbird Books tomorrow night and Saturday night. The readings are scheduled from 7 until 10 each night. You can learn more at burningchair.blogspot.com.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday evening, beginning at 10 p.m. On this Saturday edition of Shades of Jazz, I'll feature music from guitar giant Joe Pass, and also from the great jazz trio Brad Meldow and his trio. We'll hear New York Voices, Jackie McLean, and even some Marian McPartland. This and much more on the Saturday edition of Shades of Jazz at 10 p.m.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. KUAF announces a revolutionary development in radio technology, adding pictures. On Thursday, May 2nd, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me will be broadcasting their show live to the Razorback Theater in Fayetteville. You'll be able to hear and see them at the same time. It's Wait, Wait Live, Thursday, May 2nd, with panelists Mo Rocca, Tom Baudet, and Paula Poundstone, along with special guests. Tickets and more information available at KUAF.com.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Cherokee City.
Where is Cherokee City?
It is northwest of Gentry.
And you were in Cherokee City.
I was. I drove through Cherokee City. I went to a goat auction last Saturday, which I guess is a story for another day. But
I guess so. Goat auctions, where they auction off goats?
Baby goats.
Baby goats. Did you come back with a baby goat?
I did not. I wanted to, though.
Okay. Is there a baby goat in your future?
Maybe.
Okay. That is a story for another day.
They were meat goats. I really want a dairy goat.
Okay. Okay. Fine. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Have a great Thursday.